Thank you.
Hi, my name is Russell. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's good to be here. It's interesting driving up here. The answer to the question is American Gangster is the movie we watch. We're very particular about the type of movies we need to watch prior to this meeting in order to get myself spiritually fit. We've seen Godfather 1, Godfather 2, parts of Godfather 3, the Big Lebowski, and now American Gangster. So I'm fully prepared for this meeting. What? Goodfellas. Yeah, that made for a good meeting. Goodfellas. So it's good to be here. Today we're going to talk a little bit about step seven and other stuff, you know, and whatever we hit on. Listen, you know, how many people have actually been through this series, like from the beginning all the way, been here more than one or two times or something like that, and actually stuck around, you know? How many people is this your first time at, you know, this series? Wow, okay, well, it's too bad. I've sort of decided I'm just not going to pander to the first timers, you know. Has anybody noticed there's like a ratcheting up every meeting? I mean, it starts off weird and it gets kind of crazier as it goes along. I'm afraid that's the way it's going to be. You know, I've sort of, you know, in sobriety, you know, it says in the big book on page 68. Yeah, because you know we're past step three. And we're past step six, you know, the stuff that separates the men from the boys. So I'm not going to worry about people that really aren't that interested in it. I'm only going to be concerned about with the people that are serious. Because, you know, it says in Alcoholics Anonymous and in Vision for You, it says, if I can find Vision for You, it says right here, this book doesn't have Vision for You. Oh, here it is. But Life Among Alcoholics Anonymous, this is Alcoholics Anonymous, is more than attending gatherings and visiting hospitals, cleaning up old scrapes, helping to settle family differences, explaining the disinherited son to his irate parents, lending money and securing jobs for each other when justified. These are everyday occurrences. No one is too discredited or has sunk too low to be welcomed cordially if he means business. If he means business. Now, in the olden days, in Alcoholics Anonymous, they had like a little screening committee. Now, I don't know how many people read about the first few people that came to AA, like about the guy who hung himself and the other guy who was chasing some guy's wife around with a butcher knife and stuff like that. They were very selective, you know. It was kind of small. They were sort of worried. They didn't want you had to be sponsored in. They would put you in the hospital first. Dr. Bob, you know, would visit you with Bill Wilson. It's like they said with the third guy, says, I think he's worth saving. You know, they were only interested in serious-minded people. They were associated then with the Oxford group. It was a pretty serious group. They read the Bible and all that sort of stuff. They didn't want any crazies. Now, nowadays, AA has gotten so big, we don't need a screening committee. I mean, the crazies can come in. You know, there's no screening committee. The only screening committee we have is, always love a screening committee. We call it alcohol and drugs. Yeah. Screens them right out. But, you know, it's like a giant self-cleaning oven. Every 2 years, the horse shit burns off anyway. But the truth is, there could be some nut who, you know, some guy who's not serious in here who gets pissed, who stands up and urinates on the table or screams or yells. You know, guys, you can get all sorts of crazy people. But you know, the bottom line is no matter what happens in here tonight, more than likely there'll be a meeting tomorrow and the next day it's pretty big. It's probably nothing that's going to really totally screw it up. So we don't have a screening committee. But you know, the wisdom of the group says that, and even as we go along with this, because I'm going to talk a little bit about I'm going to recap a little bit about the sixth step, that there's a separation that goes on here. And the bottom line is, although we make allowances and we're very tolerant for everybody, and the newest person in the group is maybe the most important. You know, the truth of the matter is, when it comes right down to it, we're really just interested. What we're really looking at is whether you're serious or not. I mean, the steps will just define whether you're serious. How you act in AA and how you view things will define whether you're serious. Now, what happens is, and this is one of the unfortunate, this is all my, by the way, this is all, in case you didn't know, this is all my opinion. Everything I say is my opinion. So I'm gonna share you some things about myself with the seventh step and my sobriety and my experience, strength, and hope. And I want you to know that although I'm going to read certain things from the group, out of the book, I have certain opinions. That's what AA is about, isn't it? It's about, you're listening to people who've been around for a while. I've been around 27 years, and it's not the longest time in the world. My sponsor's been around for 53 years. I've had sponsors 35 years, and, it's a decent clip. I could be drunk tonight, but, and over those 27 years, I've seen a lot of stuff. I'd like to think that people to get up here, and, it's not like you get a lot of pay here, or something like that. I'd like to think if you're going to get up here, considering the group that we have here, alcoholics, addicts, whatever you have here, one would think it'd be very hard to sort of bullshit people. I sort of think that's the truth. You can't bullshit a bullshitter. And, I think the only way anybody could possibly be up here is if they told the truth as they see it from their heart. So, when I say the stuff I say, I want you to know that obviously it's my opinion. I'll read the book. I may feel strongly about it. I'd like to think it's based upon fact and experience and things I see. But, here's the bottom line. This is just my opinion given by one alcoholic who's 27 years sober, who's been through certain experiences based upon what I see, and I'm giving it to you. And that does not necessarily mean if you decide, if you think, because an alcoholic, you can decide anything you want. If you decide that what you think I'm saying is that you have to believe everything I say, or you have to do it my way, or whatever you decide I say, and you want to cop resentment or go drink up or whatever you want to do, that's your business. That's fine with me. I'm not going to change my story or my experiences, or I'm not going to change my talk here tonight in order to skew it, lest somebody get upset. I'm not going to worry about whether I say something that I strongly believe that I see, and I'm not going to try to water down or dilute my message because I think it might offend somebody. They didn't do it in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm not going to do it here tonight. So, I feel fairly strongly about certain things, and in the Big Book on page 68, and this whole thing that we started here started out with one premise, and if you weren't here, I cover this every time. I repeat it, and I repeat it over and over again, because I think repetition is like real important. And the premise is this whole thing we're involved in here, and indeed how you do and how long you stay sober, and even if you stay sober, physically sober, whether you gain emotional sobriety, spiritual sobriety, how you feel about yourself, how you feel about others, whether you experience what they're talking about, experiencing much of heaven and being rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence, of which we had not even dreamed. If you experience the promises, not just once or twice, but on a continuous basis, and whether or not you end up with the kind of sobriety and what was happening in the lives of the founders that wrote this book, like their stories talk about, will, in my mind, depend upon only one thing. Period. One thing. Which is good, because it sort of narrows it down. I believe it's scriptural. That means I believe if you look in this book and you honestly read it, give it a good read, free from your prejudices, it's pretty clear. They say it only about 2,000 times in different ways in the book. It only has to do with one thing. Every step we have is about that one thing. All the steps are designed to point you for that one thing. The steps are designed to first push you towards that one thing, get you hooked onto that one thing, and then improve the deal you have with that one thing. Now, you can do the steps until the cows come home. You go to meetings until the cows come home. You can get sponsors. You can do all this. I don't ever want to miss the point. If you miss the point of what you're here for, it ain't going to matter. Because everybody in here who has drank, we got guys in here tonight who had 18 years and drank. And I know a lot of guys that have 18 years and drank and 20 years and drank. I know guys who have had 30 years and drank. I know guys who have 30 months and drank. There are guys here who had time. Everybody in AA who has ever drank after coming to AA was sober before they drank. They were sober in Alcoholics Anonymous before they drank. They were sober in Alcoholics Anonymous going to meetings before they drank. They were sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, going to meetings and working the steps before they drank. There are guys here tonight who were sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, working the steps, had a sponsor, doing it well, and even teaching the steps with sponsees who drank. So apparently, being sober, going to AA meetings, and working the steps, even sponsoring people, is not enough to ensure sobriety. I'm just telling you based upon what I say. I know they tell you don't drink, go to meetings. I don't want to scare too many people. Well, I don't really care whether I scare anybody or not, really. That would be a lie. If more people were scared, the truth is, if more people were scared, there'd probably be more people sober. They really had respect for this thing. So what I want to do is talk about the one thing. And I think if we focus on the one thing, you'll see it mapped throughout the steps. You'll understand throughout the steps. And now here's the good part. You don't have to buy into any of this. We're just going to kill an hour, 40 minutes, whatever it is. And then I'm going to do this for a few more weeks. I'm going to basically say the same thing over and over and over again. Some people are going to say, you know, I think he's right. And that's the way they're going to base their deal from now on that thing. There are some people who think he's full of crap, and they're going to do their thing. And then 5 years from now, we'll meet and we'll compare notes. There's going to be other people that come up here and say, well, I don't agree with that. I think it's this or that or the other thing. It doesn't matter. There's so many voices, you know, all the crazies that were in the bar in here. All the wacky, you know, this ain't Well People's Anonymous. So you're going to get all the points of view. The great thing is that you should have the option of getting all points of view. Nobody should tell you how to run your life, but you should have the ability to have, like a supermarket, you should be able to choose what you want, what your deal is. And so I'm just giving you my lot. This is me. This is what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. What we do in Alcoholics Anonymous is we talk about ourselves. We say, this is what I got. If you want what I got, this is what the deal is. If you don't want it, it's okay. You know, so here's what it says. It says on page 68. It says, we never, and of course, the one, I'm not going to even keep you guessing because I'm going to read a few things and then we're going to go into this. You know, the one thing is your relationship is developing, maintaining, increasing your relationship with God, the Creator. Period, end of story. Period, end of story. That's it. That's what all these steps are about. The first three steps are, the first step is to get you on your, the first step is sort of like, I call it the mule step. You know, I think I talked about it last time, you know, where the guy sells another guy a mule, he says he'll do anything, he's the greatest mule in the world, the mule does nothing, so he calls up his neighbor, he says, your mule's not doing anything. So he walks up to, he says, well, let me show you how you do it. He walks up to the mule, takes a 2x4, hits him between the eyes, and then the mule starts, he says, first you got to get his attention. Well, the first step is like, the first step is how we get an alcoholic's attention. You know? The alcohol, the consumption of alcohol, and the subsequent demise of you spiritually as a result of that is the first thing that is used to get your attention. That something's wrong, and you got to give up this way of doing it, this basis of life. You know, that's the first thing. The next thing they throw in, you got to look for a power greater than yourself. The very next thing they throw in is God. And it's just not believing God. It's like turning your will and your life over to Him. And then every step after that is about somehow developing a stronger relationship with God. Getting rid of any obstacle that could keep you from your relationship with God. Any worldly clamor that will divert you into other things. Focusing on that thing until we finally get the 11th step, which says, okay, now you got it, now you're solid, now you're there. Now we're just going to work on increasing it, increasing it, increasing it, increasing it, and now go out and disciple others and talk to others about it. That's the whole deal. The whole thing's about a relationship with God. And you know something? I'm not ashamed of that. You know, there's a lot of people that are ashamed of that in AA. They're ashamed of that because alcoholics, no matter what they say in bars when they're drinking, when they say things, I don't give a shit what they think about me, I don't care what they think about me. The truth is most alcoholics have very low opinions of themselves. They have very low self-esteem. You know, it says we're reborn. It says attitudes and emotions which were the guiding force of these men's lives, you know, suddenly shifted one side and they become dominated by a whole new set of ideas, emotion, and attitudes. Well, the attitude of the alcoholic essentially before he comes in here is that I'm a piece of crap. As a matter of fact, the more he tells you he doesn't feel he's a creepy piece of crap, probably the more he is. You know, I mean, the more he's braggadocious, name-dropping, or whatever it is, the ostentatiousness, the grandiosity of the alcoholic, you know, the way we are. And so what we try to do is we try to blend in. We worry about, we get pissed off or get upset when people don't like us. We can't handle rejection. And the bottom line is we don't want to do anything to really look too different. You know, and the last thing an alcoholic ever wants, the worst thing, is to have people laugh at him. And so it's understandable, since every alcoholic just about that comes in here hates God. And everybody alcoholic that comes in here thinks that people who believe in God are stupid and uncool. It's understandable why in a group of alcoholics, nobody will raise their hand and talk about God first, unless they look around and they say it's okay, that they won't be made fun of. So it's understandable why, although the book focuses entirely upon God and your relationship with God, it's understandable by that as it filters through the group of Alcoholics Anonymous, everybody in the group is saying things like, you don't have to worry about that, don't talk about that, don't, because it makes alcoholics feel uncomfortable. You know, unless somebody else talks about it and they say, well, I guess it's okay. And then all of a sudden they start leaving and say, that's pretty, because that's where the weight and the depth is. That's what this thing is really all about. And what happens, though, with this deal is, since that is the truth, and that's why they put it in there, because it was the truth of the matter is, no matter how much alcoholics hate to hear it, and it makes them uncomfortable, since it is the truth, and the bottom line is, what ultimately stays here is what stays here, the bullshit does burn off. And the fact of the matter is, for, you know, 70 years it's been around, they haven't been able to get rid of the God thing. Because the truth is, the guys that stay around with good sobriety and have 20 and 30 years, that's all they want to talk about. You know, so the truth stays. You know, and the guys that don't want to accept it, they end up burning up. Or nobody wants what they have. So, you know, so there's sort of like an obligation, you know. Now, in the book itself, it says right here, it says, we never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. With a capital C. It says, we never apologize for anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is a way of weakness. Paradoxically, it's the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. Did you know that? All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate through us what He can do. We ask Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. Did you know in the beginning of the book, and I know I've said this before, we have some new people here, you know in the beginning of the book where it talks about what it says is this, it says, we in our turn sought the same escape with all this desperation of drowning men. What seemed at first a flimsy reed has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. Louis, is there a problem?
Let's go to the restroom.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Well, I'm sorry to embarrass you. We in turn sought the same escape with all the desperation of drowning men. What seemed at first a flimsy reed has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. If what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a living Creator with whom we may form a relationship. With whom we may form a relationship. You know, you guys have relationships. You got friends, you got relationships. Of course, in AA, when they talk about relationships, they're essentially talking about romantic relationships. You know, really, that's what people focus on in AA. Why aren't I married? Why don't I have a boyfriend? Why don't I have a girlfriend? That's what the whole focus is on in AA. When people are depressed or not feeling well, they want to talk about romantic relationships, which in AA jargon is something akin to like owning a car. You know, if we had an alcoholic life, which we thought was the only normal one, if you guys know what it's like to be an alcoholic. I was an active alcoholic. Anybody here was an active alcoholic? When you're an active alcoholic, you have certain ideas and old ideas, new ideas, all sorts of crazy ideas that run your life. You know, you just are so sure of what you need and what you want and what you have to have in life. You know what I mean? And these old ideas actually hang on for a while. They have to come to AA. That's why it says, in order to get any sobriety, we have to, what? Get rid of all the old ideas. So one would think that if you ever could, I'm not so sure you could, that would be perfection. One would think that if you could get rid of all those old ideas and you finally came up here and you were perfectly sober, because all those old ideas were gone, whoever that person is who has all those old ideas gone, who is the epitome of sobriety, would probably look as different, act as different, speak as different, and have ideas as different and weird, like black and white, to the alcoholic. So you would expect a man who really latched hold of this thing to say stuff that made absolutely no sense to an alcoholic. Things like, you know, romance that you guys think is crap, is bullshit. You know, and you hear that and you say, this guy is really crazy. which only proves to me that I'm absolutely 100% right. You're my sounding board, because if you guys think it's crazy, it must be good. Because most of the people in here have that old idea that the most important thing is romance. That's why you get depressed when you don't have it. And you base your life on that, and that's why your life is crap. Because no person is going to make you, because if you base your life on the person, if you don't have the person you're standing, once you get the person, you better put them in cement. Because then you're always going to be looking at that person. You see, your life, because you're going to drink, or something's going to happen, or you're going to be in a room sucking your thumb because of him or her. You know what I mean? You know, and the bottom line, and I just happen to be using a person, a romance, we could use cars, money, well, it doesn't even matter. It doesn't even matter. The truth is, it better be based on something different. It better be based on something solid. Now, there is something solid we base our lives on in Alcoholics Anonymous, or all lives on in Alcoholics Anonymous, but we're not allowed to talk about it in the fellowship. It's only brought out in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. So it says here, it says, what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all. It means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a living creator with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms as soon as we are willing and honest enough to try. It's about a relationship. You know what it says on page 29? It says, further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recover. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each individual, each one of you, when you talk from this podium, when you speak to anybody in AA, each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established this relationship with God. I'm not making this stuff up. You think that what I'm supposed to come up here and tell you is a drunkalogue. I'm supposed to talk about drinking. Well, that may be good. There's nothing wrong with that in certain venues. But don't kid yourself. What we're supposed to talk about, what this book is about, what the 42 stories about, is how each individual establishes his relationship with God. That's what the whole book is about. See to it. It ends the book. The last line is, see to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. And when you get to the chapter dealing with 6 and 7, which is... And of course, we could always go to working with others. Let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he has his family back. This just isn't so. In some cases, the wife will never come back. I mean, you don't get more of a relationship, solid relationship, more important relationship than a husband-wife relationship. I'm sorry, when it comes to men and women, when it comes to couples, when it comes to coupling up, you don't get any more sanctified. Now, I know in this country now, in our society, marriage isn't worth much. You know what I mean? But the fact of the matter is, as far as what the law looks, let me tell you something. If you're with somebody and you're not married for 20, 30 years, and he leaves, you go into court and try to get alimony. You go into court and try to split property. You see how much the courts and legal, this country is still a country, in the United States of America, in our culture, we still, no matter how beat up it is, sanctify marriage. Our laws are all about around marriage. You know, it's a big deal when somebody commits to somebody else. And you know what it says about marriage? It talks about wives and husbands. Don't get more romantic and committed than that. Let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he has his family back. This just isn't so. In some cases, the wife will never come back for one reason or another. Remind the prospect that his recovery, that his life, that everything in his life, his whole recovery, everything about him is not dependent upon people. No, it's not dependent upon his wife. It's not dependent upon his lover. It's not dependent upon any. It's not dependent upon his boss. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. It's not dependent upon any. No, what does it say? What are the three things we have to be convinced of? That we're alcoholic and cannot manage our own lives. That no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. That only God could and would if he were sought. It's all about seeking him, isn't it? It says right here, this just isn't so. In some cases, the wife will never come back for one reason or another. Remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people. It is dependent upon his relationship with God. I'm not making this crap up. I'm not adding the words in relationship with God and they're not there. And you want to know something? There's 70 other places in the book where it says the exact same thing. Different ways. And if you haven't heard about this in AA, if this is like the first time you've heard about this, it's because we never talk about it in AA. Because what we talk about in AA is my mother, my cousin, my boyfriend, my girlfriend, all the worldly clamors that sends you out, that you want to, all the stuff you're actually really thinking about all the time.
Problems.
You know why you feel bad most of the time? You know why you're on edge most of the time? Because most of the time you're thinking about them instead of him. Most of the time you are focused on them. Or yourself, them and me and how I am doing, you're focused on that stuff 98% of the time. So 98% of the time, you're feeling ill at ease. Restless here because you're not focused on him. That's why you feel crappy. You wouldn't even know how to focus on him because it's the alcoholic nature. It's part of the old idea, you know. And as a matter of fact, when somebody tells you not to do that, you think they're crazy. Because your alcoholic ideas and the way you think and how you think seems the only normal way of thinking to you because it's the way you thought all your life. You're not thinking any differently. You were thinking even now, sober. You're sober, but the truth of the matter is, if you align the things you think of 90% of the time during the day, the money, the sex, the whole thing you think of, and you look at what you were thinking about, most of the stuff you're thinking about before you even came into AA, it's pretty much the same deal. It's pretty much the same deal. And the stuff you complain about right now in AA meetings is the same shit you were complaining about in the bars. Truth of the matter is, for most people in Alcoholics Anonymous, the only difference between being sober and being not sober is that you're just not drinking. Most people in AA aren't really sober anyway. They're not emotionally sober, they're not emotionally grown up, they're still children, and they're not spiritually sober, and they're not serious about this thing. They want to stay sober, you know, and a lot of people are interested, but most people are pretty much childish, emotional children, and not really interested in this stuff and are scared of it. And rather just sort of settle just for not drinking, sort of, you know, make it day by day. And thank you very much, but I don't want to go into that door. So, now that's the easiest stuff. Now it's going to get a little tougher. Now, as I promised you, it's going to get weird. That wasn't the weird stuff. It's going to get real weird. But you want it, yeah, because now we're going to go into the 12 and 12. Now it's going to get real weird. Oh, by the way, let me just read the one thing. It's step 5 to set this thing up before we get into stuff. Okay, when we started off Into Action. It's the chapter, and here's how Into Action starts. Now remember, I'm saying the whole basis is being introduced to God, turning your life over to God, building a relationship with God, and all these steps are about that, removing obstacles to those steps. Now let me read you the first. Hey, you know, it's funny. I read these things, and, you know, I get, like, credit for reading this stuff. It's like people have never heard it before. And I think what happens, and I think it happened to me. I mean, let me tell you something. I've got 27 years. And you know what that means? I'm not bragging. I'm just telling you. So after 16 years, I started noticing this stuff. So if you've got, like, 16 months, or if you've got 6 years, or 10 years, or 12 years, and you never saw any of this stuff, don't feel bad at all, because I didn't even know it was in the book until I had 16 years. And I started going to Bibles and different things, and I started realizing and looking, and I say, oh my God, it's all there. Why didn't I see this stuff? Because it's easy to see what you want to see, and read what you want to read, and make believe it's not there, so it's so much easier to make believe this is a program that I feel comfortable with. You know what I feel comfortable with? A program where I don't have to do things that I feel uncomfortable. So it's very easy for me to make this into a program and rationalize my way so that I don't really have to do that stuff, or I don't have to do this, or that's for some people, that's for other people. It's very easy for me to listen to people that tell me, no, I don't have to do the God thing. Or if you tell me I can do this program without changing, or I have to do this program and I go on a change, I'm going to go with the guy who says I can do this program and I can stay the way I am. You know why? Because it's easier for me to stay the way I am. It's more comfortable to stay the way I am, or else I wouldn't be the way I am. The reason I am the way I am is because it's like effortless. You understand? It's like effortless to think and be the way I am. It's like zero easy. You know what I mean? So if I can read this so that it says, I'm okay, you're okay, everything's okay, I don't have to change, don't listen to this guy, don't get to that guy, read it in such a way so that as long as I'm not drinking, I'm going to meetings and I'm sort of congregating around and looking like this, but I don't have to change, that's what I'm doing. That's my deal. And there's plenty of people in AA who'll say, that Russell guy's a little weird, you know what I mean? And they'd be right. And they'd be right. That's okay. It doesn't matter. I'm a little weird. We're all a little weird, you know. But here's what it says on step. But, you know, the book is the book.
Thank you.
Chapter 6, the book is the book. You know, this has nothing to do with me. I just, hey, listen, I'm just the messenger. I'm just reporting. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? What shall we do about it? What's this four-step all? You see, I'm telling you what this thing is all about is your relationship with God. It's all about forming a relationship with God. It's all about removing obstacles to that relationship with God. That's what the four-step is about. It's not so you can be a psychologist or you can know thyself. It's all about this all time. If it's not about a relationship with God, don't you understand? One thing the book says is self-knowledge is horseshit. You can't say, if you think the fourth step and the fifth step and all these steps is so to make you smarter, the smartest algies I know are the drunkest. The guys who are analyzed, who think they're so smart, never make it, and they're never happy. They're thinking way too much. Here's what the fourth step is about. Here's what all the steps are about. It says it in chapter 5, except most people don't even see it, because they can read past it. It says, having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? Why are we doing it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path to that relationship. Did anybody hear that?
Now,
having made our personal inventory, what shall we do? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. In our path to that relationship. That's what this whole thing's about. So unless you understand that, it doesn't make any sense to go through with it. Once you understand that, you know, if you know the one thing, the big book says? It says there either is a God or there isn't a God. Big book comes down. Let me tell you something. Big book does not take a neutral position on this. They wrote a chapter just for the people who wanted to go on the other side. They called a chapter the agnostic. You know what they say in the chapter? They said, get over it. They don't take a neutral position on this. Later on in the book, they don't say you have to, but they encourage church membership. Their position is there is a God, there is a Creator. You form a relationship with Him. He's all-powerful. It says, if we sincerely took this position, all sorts of remarkable things happening. Being all-powerful, He gives us everything we need if we stay close to Him and do His work well. You know, I don't know what they're talking about, you know, unless you want to rip off every page in the big book and burn it, you know, and just keep a couple of pages. I mean, the whole thing is about what I'm talking about. People are like saying, I never heard that in AA. Of course you're never going to hear it in AA. They don't talk about it in AA. So let's go on to the 12 steps and the 12 traditions, the 12 and 12.
And the chapter you were reading was Into Action, not Into Thinking.
That's right. Here it is. Step 6. I'm going to read this one paragraph, and I'm going to spend the next 10 minutes or so talking about step 7. This is the step that separates the men from the boys. So this declares a well-loved clergyman who happens to be one of A's greatest friends. He goes on to explain that any person capable of enough willingness and honesty to try repeatedly step 6 on earnest faults without any reservations whatever. Now here you go. This is what I read last time. If you want to think, am I doing six step? Am I really doing this thing? Oh, I'm really trying this thing. Really, have we seen part of it? It's thoroughly. So here's the deal. This is their test. This is how you figure it out. This is how they determine whether or not you're a man or a boy. This is the separation. Without any reservation, has indeed come a long way spiritually and is therefore entitled to be called a man who is sincerely trying to grow in the image and likeness of his own Creator. So I guess the men, according to this, are those who are trying to grow in the image and likeness of their own Creator. Now listen, I don't want to get theological on you. Okay, those are very strong words. It was written by a clergyman. They put it right in there in the first paragraph. They didn't see people who were trying to, they didn't say in there anybody who's trying to do the next right thing. Trying to do the next right thing is something people say that you do in AA when they don't want to do this thing. It's a watering down of the text of the basic book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Listen, if you're trying to grow in the image and likeness of your Creator and your God, you will do the next right thing. If you're just trying to do the next right thing, you'll fail miserably. Because most of the time, I don't know what the next right thing is, because somehow for me, the next right thing never includes paying back the money. I don't know. I just have my brain just figures out, you know, you're not a lawyer, why I shouldn't have to do it. But when you start talking about having a Creator, having a God looking at you, trying to grow in His image and likeness, all that thing, that connotes like conviction and guilt, and you know, am I really doing this right? You know, it brings in, it, you know, if somebody's watching you, if you have a relationship with somebody, if you have a father or mother who you trust, you know, it's like the book talks about like almost the father that you trust, and you want him to feel, you feel obligated to him. You know what Bill Wilson said? He said, this is what he said, this was his stand. He says, the Lord's been so great to me, Henrietta, been so great to me, curing me of this terrible disease. I just have to keep on telling people about it all the time. When you have that sort of relationship going on, where you're praying to him all the time, it's a little bit tougher to screw people over. It's a little bit easier when it's just you and you doing the next right thing. And of course, who decides what the next right thing is? Well, conveniently, me. And we all know how emotionally well I am. I mean, my past proves it.
That's why the lights went off.
That's why. So let's, but here, I want to go to step 7 because here's where we can get real crazy. Now, I want to read you page 71. Certainly no alcoholic and surely no member of AA wants to deprecate material achievement. What's material achievement? You know, the cars, the money. Hey, listen, I'm not down on that. I'm the last one to say, look, you got to be poor or anything. I'm not down on that, but we all know one thing. We know, just like Bill Wilson said, those are distractions from him. They are distractions. They are distractions, aren't they? You know, if you've been around here long enough, you see people drink. Why do they drink?
Money, sex, power.
They don't drink because things are going bad. I mean, people that have really tough things that are suffering, going bad, they stay sober for long periods of time. You throw somebody a lot of money, you throw them a girlfriend, you throw them a boyfriend, you throw the whole thing at them right in here, they're gone. They're flying high. Certainly no alcoholic and surely no member of AA wants to deprecate material achievement. Nor do we enter into a debate with the many who still so passionately cling to the belief that to satisfy our basic natural desires is the main object of life. See, there are some people that think the main object of their life, they sit around there saying, James said to me today, yeah, I love James, he's a good guy. He said, you know, things are going great, but can it happen a little bit faster? Why can't it happen a little bit faster? I said, well, what would you like to come a little bit faster? You know, thinking he might say, well, God's love. Or, you know. What did we end up with? 25,000? Is that what you need? 25, yeah. Nor do we enter into a debate with many who still so passionately cling to believe that satisfy our basic natural desires is the main object of life. You know, the truth of the matter is, and I'm not putting anybody down, I'm like that, you know, to a certain extent, many of us in here struggle with that God and mammon thing. Many of them here, especially when we first come in, and as we go along, the struggle is thinking all the time about ourselves in terms of what I think I need. I was talking about, where is your passion? Where your passion is, that's where your heart is, that's where you're going to spend the time, that's when you spend about thinking all the time. You come in here, you say the Lord's Prayer, you go out, you say the, or whatever it is, before the meeting, we say the Serenity Prayer, you do all that stuff, and then you spend 98% of your time thinking about money, thinking about women, thinking about men, thinking about sex, thinking about cars, thinking about everything else. But then you come day, and for 5 minutes, you think about God, and that's the only thing that's keeping you sober. And you don't even realize it. The thing that's killing you, that's wrecking you, that's tearing your heart out, that you talk about all the times in meeting, is all the stuff you're thinking about on here. You come in here, you give 5 minutes to God, and that's the only thing that's keeping you sober. And you're embarrassed to even think and talk about Him. You can't wait to get out the door so you can talk more about the things. Certainly no alcoholic and surely no member of AA wants to deprecate material achievement, nor do we enter into a debate with many who still so passionately cling to the belief that to satisfy our basic natural desires is the main object of life. But we are sure that no class of people in the world ever made a worse mess of trying to live by this formula than alcoholics. That's all I'm saying. That's a formula you can't live by. You know, you can prove it to yourself as many times. You can drink as many times as you want. You can prove it to yourself as many times as you want. This is the wrong formula. AA has the right formula. The A formula is trust him, turn everything over to him, build your relationship with him, base your life upon him, you know, seek him first, seek ye first the kingdom of God, and everything you need will be added to you. You'll get everything you need, and you know, if you don't have it, you won't even care about it because it won't be anything you need. For thousands of years, we have been demanding more than our share of security, prestige, and romance. They lump it right in there with the cars. When we seem to be succeeding, yeah, you thought I made that up. You thought that was just like off the top. You thought I was making, you were saying, well, we don't have to believe him. That's just his opinion. You didn't realize I was getting it from the material. You know why? Because I've read the material. Because I'm familiar with the A big book and the 12 and 12 and what the program is and what it isn't. Because I've made myself, because you know why? Because I'm serious about this thing. When we seemed to be succeeding, we drank to dream still greater dreams. When we were frustrated, even in part, we drank for oblivion. Never was there enough of what we thought we wanted. Only got 5 minutes, and I want to get to this one part. The talk about gaining a new perspective was unbelievably painful. In other words, and this is what they say in the big book, they say the way we gain a new perspective on all this stuff, on all these things, you know, this is a program about doing more and giving up more and surrendering more. You got to surrender the booze. It's a little bit tougher to surrender the friends. It's a little bit tougher to surrender the resentments, especially when you feel justified. It's a little bit tougher to surrender a lot of the prideful things. It's a little bit tougher to get down on your knees and say that third step prayer. You know, it's tough to do a lot of these things. It's tough to listen to people that want to tell you. It's constantly giving up more and more, being taken into rooms you don't want to go into. Being thrust through doors that you don't want to go into, talking about stuff that you'd rather not talk about. It's tough forgiving people you'd rather not forgive. It's tough going up to people and asking for their forgiveness. It's tough surrendering more and more. And then after years and years and years, finally getting to the point to say, now what I do, and then some schmuck says, you need to do more. It's tough living a life where you have to constantly surrender. And then after 10, 15, 20 years, you realize you haven't even made a dent. And you got, but the truth is, you realize that in order to be separated from them, boys, you even have to go further. You can't go backwards. You can't even stand still. It's easy to rest on a spiritual program, rest on a spiritual program of action, and rest our laurels. But we're headed for trouble if we do. Yeah, you can't even stand still. You got to keep on going forward. What does it say? Any man who, what does it say in the sixth step? Who is will do this unreservedly for a lifetime? It's a lifetime job. Is you can call him a man who is trying to grow in the image of his likeness of his creator, try to grow to perfection. It's tough doing that. It's easy to get like 10 years, 15 years, and then just relax and slide down and live your life the way you want to live your life. It's tough to do it that way. But that's the formula. That's the formula. The formula isn't get 15, 20 years and then go back to the way, let's go after the sex, drugs, and rocks. And rock. Now I can do it. That's the formula. The formula of servitude. The formula of being a servant, of going out there like Bill Wilson till the day he dies and trying to help other people. Living your life as a servant for other people. Being a maximum effective. It's tough doing that stuff. Giving up what you think is the glory and all. It's tough doing that deal. It was only by repeated humiliations that we were forced to learn something about humility. It was only at the end of a long road marked by successive defeats and humiliations and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency we began to feel humility as something more than a condition of groveling despair. Every newcomer in Alcoholics Anonymous is told and soon realizes for himself that his humble admission of powerlessness over alcohol is his first step towards liberation from his paralyzing grip. Listen, I have no idea what humility is all about. I wouldn't know it. You know, I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you wake up in the morning and says, I think I'll be humble today. I mean, I don't think that's it. I think as soon as you say that, oh boy, I was pretty humble today. I think as soon as you say that, you lost it. But I do have some passing familiarity with humility. I had it when I picked up my white chip in Alcoholics Anonymous. I walked up, picked up my white, I have some, and I know something about humility when it comes to me. It usually is preceded by a great deal of pain and suffering. It's generally not succeeded by riding the crest. You know what I mean? And I'm going to tell you a little something here. I'm going to promise you a little something. If you're going to do this deal, if you think being crushed by alcohol, that if you think the party, the suffering is over, If you think that it's all fun and games, you've got an interesting life ahead of you in Alcoholics Anonymous when you see what God, your Creator, is going to do to you to get you to the point where you start realizing some of the stuff you got to give up. You're going to have a real fun time on this deal. If you don't drink, and most of you will, but if you don't drink, you're going to go through a horror story of depression and crap until you just give up that ghost. Until you give up, it's the man, or it's the woman, or the car, or until you give up that ghost, your life will be made crap. It says here, this improved perception of humility starts another revolutionary change in our outlook. Here's the change in the outlook. You're going to like this one. Our eyes begin to open to the immense values which have come straight out of painful ego puncturing. Isn't that the way you think all the time? Oh, you know, I love having the shit knocked out of me. Don't you love it when you're humiliated and your ego gets punched? Don't you love that? Man, I love when that happens. Until now, our lives have been largely devoted to running from pain and problems. Oh yeah, I like that deal. I like or drinking them away or something. We fled from them as from a plague. Now, this is the greatest line. And the sad news to report is it's true. You know, listen, I'm just telling you, it's true in my life, and they have it in here. We never wanted to deal with the fact of suffering. We never wanted to deal with the fact of suffering. Escape by the bottle was always our solution. Character building through suffering might be all right for saints, but it certainly didn't appeal to us. Listen. This is all I can tell you about the seventh step. The seventh step for me is when you find out the incredibly horrible, impossible predicament you find yourself in. You see, after you see all these defects of character, and you don't see them all, I promise you, you won't see them all. You'll see a few of them. You know what I mean? But after you see a few of them that you say are nasty, and after you pray fervently to get rid of them, and 10 years later, when they're still around. And you've been working this thing as hard as possible, trying to get rid of them, and it's 10 years down the road, and they're still not gone, and you're broke, or you're humiliated, or you're alone, or your life is... But hey, you're sober and going to meetings. And your life is an absolute disaster, and you're sober, and you're crushed, and you got nobody to talk to. It'll finally dawn upon you somehow, some way, some night. Like when you were drinking, you'll say, I'm hopeless, I'm helpless, I need help. And you'll get down on your knees. And you'll humbly ask him to remove that defect. You'll ask. You know why? Because there is a God. Because we're supposed to be forming a relationship with God. And if you have a relationship with somebody, you know what? You talk to him. And you're sincere with him. And you ask him things. And you're serious because you believe him. And you have faith. And you will be on your knees and you will be asking.
All day long.
You'll be asking all day long. You'll be serious about this stuff. You say, God, remove this deal from me. Please help me not to think about him, her, it, them, that. You'll be hanging around with people so you don't have to think about it. You'll be doing what is necessary. You will ask. Why put it in there? Why put in the humbly ask him? Not only ask him. Well, forget about the ask him. The humbly part. I mean, ask him is easy. Okay, God, please remove it. The humbly part. How do you do the humbly part? You're sort of like, okay, I'm going to get humble now. Okay, God, please ask, you know. No, he gets you humble. He does the humbly. You don't have to do the humbly. You can't, as a matter of fact, you can't do the humbly. He's going to do the humbly for you. He's going to help you with that deal. You know what I mean? And then one day, when you get humble enough, and you get on your knees, and you humbly ask him and recognize him, and throw away and stop worrying about what the fool next to you at an A meeting is thinking. And stop worrying about the bullshit the other people are thinking. And start thinking, well, maybe that Russell, maybe this is what that idiot was talking about. And you're not worried because your life is going down the tubes and it's your life. And you get on your knees and you do what you have to do. And somewhere along the line, you wake up one day and all of a sudden that thing that was bothering you, that was eating your liver, you know what I mean, is no longer there. And you've been transformed and you've been changed closer to the image and his likeness. And all of a sudden, that thing that you were going to bed with and waking up with and that problem or that behavior is not there anymore. And you can't even take credit for it because the last thing you remember is all you were doing is worrying about it and bitching about it and moaning about it and all of a sudden it's not there. You're going to say, holy shit, this stuff does work. Wow, this is powerful crap. You know what I mean? It's going to be just like you guys don't even know why you're not drinking. You can't even take credit for not drinking. You don't even know why you're not drinking. Well, you know, you can also use that on not thinking.
Yes.
You know, but what we get in here is once we get strong, you know what it says in the Bible? It says, when you're weak, I'm strong. When you're weak, I'm strong. You know, when we get strong, we get powerful. We get, you know, even if we say we believe in God, we start using self-reliance. Works against this deal. Self-reliance means I don't need a relationship with you. I don't need a relationship with you. You know, when my daughters and my kids have money, when they have power, I never get a phone call. I'm not saying they don't love me, and I love my kids. I really do. I love them, you know? They're my kids. They got my DNA, you know what I mean? My gene pool. But let me tell you something. When they don't need anything, you know something? I don't get a phone call. You know? When I get a phone call, I know somewhere at the end of that phone call there's going to be a request. You know what I mean? Sure, you're laughing. You don't know what it's like.
We know it's true.
Yeah, we know it's true. Thank you very much.
Yeah.